Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present on history.org. This is Behind the Scenes, where you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. This time, I'm asking Mac Headley. And at Colonial Williamsburg, he's the master cabinet maker, which leads to the first question. What is the master cabinet maker?
Well, it means largely that I get to supervise the cabinet-making exhibition. We're a shop open to the public, people traveling through while we're practicing 18th-century cabinet-making or building furniture, high-style furniture, using 18th-century woodworking tools.
Where did you learn to do that? I mean, that's not a normal skill.
Well, a tremendous amount here working with original objects in the museum. But I started out in a family shop. My father and grandfather, great-grandfather were cabinet makers, and we didn't work totally by hand. But the small custom shop did do a lot of specialty hand work, which I guess prepared me for somewhat for the job.
If I counted right, you are a fourth-generation cabinet maker. Your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, you.
Yes.
You don't find that very often.
Not too many, although my son is coming along.
Really?
Well, he's not actually cabinet making, furniture conservation, that's more.
Oh, that's close.
Yes, that's a degree program.
Oh, really? Yes. See, all the sorts of things I didn't know. Where is he in college?
Oh, he's, about to begin at the Winter program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How long have you been here?
On and off since mid-1970s. Came spring of 76, worked here for about 3 years, worked for myself for about five, and been here back here since 84.
Mm-hmm. Why did you come in 76?
Well, at that point in time, the curator of furniture was traveling up through the northern Shenandoah Valley, where I'm from, and was lecturing about 18th-century furniture made in that area. And at the end of the presentation, in talking to him, he'd mentioned that Williamsburg was looking for a cabinet maker, and it was just too tempting not to come and see what the job was all about.
Did you have an interest in the 18th century?
Well, the most of the work of the family business was, antique dealers, restoration, and reproduction largely of antique designs in the old business. So that is something already kind of been involved in.
I'm fairly good at woodworking, and my father was even better, but I'm certainly not a cabinet maker. That requires a degree of skill that I am never going to see. So you learned everything on the job, actually, from the family business to here to...
Yes, I think that's reasonable. It is, the only way to learn it is hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
And just the original objects we have in the museum are just tremendous and very unself-conscious examples of what professional work was like at a time when professionals were pretty accomplished. Middle of the 18th century is about as sophisticated artistically and structurally, or from an engineering perspective. It's about as thoughtful as furniture gets.
Were consumers demanding then?
Yes, I think very much so.
I've often wondered, looking at pieces, why people put so much of themselves into a piece of furniture. Could be, one is they were proud of their ability, and two, the customer didn't want it if they didn't. So it was a double-edged sword there.
Yes, I think the training of the 18th century customer, or the folks who really set the standards at the time, is very thoughtful. I guess Jefferson's a great example of someone who put a great deal of thought into architectural design, and that's the foundations of furniture design as well. So we have very well-educated customers.
Mm. Architecture and furniture, I had not thought of that, hadn't connected the two. But they do connect, don't they?
Very. Very strongly, yes. Mm. And I guess Thomas Chippendale mentioned at the beginning of his design book, really the first furniture design book to be published in England, that drawing in perspective and architectural design are the real soul and basis of your art as a cabinet maker, and that's his.
Okay, can you draw?
I work at it, and I think, again, a good many of the treaties that do suggest training and skill development in the 18th century suggest drawing as a very, very important exercise.
You mentioned you were also a supervisor and had a shop. How many people work in the shop, not including you?
There are six in the shop at this point. Four of them are cabinet makers, two apprentices, two journeymen, and then two harpsichord makers. The 18th century shop we're representing advertised cabinet making, certainly, but as a very unusual addition, they also said they could make and repair spinets and harpsichords. So we're really, in some ways, representing a couple professions.
So you're a music shop as well.
Well, those fellas handle their side of the business, and they don't do any cabinet making. And
you don't do any music instrument making.
Two very different kinds of woodworking, both, I think, very sophisticated, but both quite different.
Okay. Going to change tack a little bit. What do people who visit you want to know about? Today's visitor walks into the shop and says, "Mr. Master Cabinet Maker," and ask a question.
I guess most folks, as they come in and try to settle in and understand really what are they seeing. Is this a presentation or is this a real operation? Are we really doing what we pretend to be? Are the things that we're presenting on the floor old or new? You just try to find out what is this place all about.
Okay, I'll ask the same question. Is it old or new, and what is this place all about?
Yeah, well, that's, I guess, the introduction when folks come in. That's our job to kind of say we've made all these things in the next room with our hand tools. We have a two-part shop. We have a presentation room, an addition which looks like it was added to the 18th century business as a showroom or display room. It's where the 18th century cabinet maker might have marketed some ready-made things. So we just present our objects as things we have produced, most of them copied off of specific Virginia antiques, and they're welcome to open a drawer and look things over. They won't let you touch the antiques in the buildings, but our things are representative of them, and we just try to introduce them to 18th century style and construction.
So you not only are doing the 18th century way, you're doing it in an 18th century shop. You said this could have been a showroom.
Well, we're a reconstruction on the site of a business that was busy from the early 1750s up until the Revolution, and it looks to have fallen down sometime late 1770s, early 1780s. Mm-hmm. The last master cabinet maker there joins the Revolutionary Army and doesn't return from the war, and the capital moves to Richmond, and there's just a number of factors make that the cabinet making kind of ends at that point for that specific shop.
You were a victim, or he was a victim, of Murphy's Law. Whatever could go wrong did. He didn't even come back. That was a bad ending for him, almost certainly. Other than asking if it's real or if you do it, does anybody ever want to see you hands-on making something?
Well, that's part of our job. And with this two-room shop or passing through the ware room or showroom into the workshop, hopefully when staffing allows, we have people who are working. There'll usually be one person who'll be fielding questions and searching for interests of people and hopefully occupying the visitor's attention while other people do have real projects they're making progress on. Mm-hmm. At present, we're just winding up a set of a half a dozen chairs of one pattern, an unusual chair we were preparing for a woodworking symposium we give in the winter as a demonstration piece. We're cleaning up the final work on a bed copied from one that looked to have been Martha Washington's bed. It's in the Smithsonian now. And then there's always a harpsichord in progress.
You finish up the chairs, you finish up Martha Washington's bed. What happens to them? I mean, you can't just make these and throw them out.
Well, for many years, a concerted effort by the museum over the last at least couple decades has been to refurnish the exhibition buildings as accurately to 18th century inventories as was possible. Mm-hmm. And also get good Virginia designs into high traffic areas where antiques wouldn't survive and are irreplaceable. So we've been making pieces that have gone into exhibitions for really quite a long time. Now collections has pretty much got things the way they think they should be. They're not asking for a great deal from us. We continue to choose projects to train apprentices or develop journeyman skills or study specific 18th century cabinet makers. And so far, the things we've done have sold when turned over to our products people. Prentice Store is covering the sales of objects from the trade shops, mm-hmm. and our things included. So we just pass them on, and so far they.
So for once you've done the collections thing and everything is pretty much happy, you actually are a cabinet making shop retail. You make furniture. That's what you do.
Yes.
So when people come in and say, "What are you doing?" You say, "I'm making furniture and trying to make a profit if I can."
Well, making a profit is not very likely under our circumstances.
Well, and, yeah.
And I think if they, certainly 18th century workers are working with a real sense of urgency, and that's a very important part of the character of 18th century work. If we pressured our workmen to the point where the visitors were an intrusion or cutting into our profits, I don't think we'd be handling that side of our job as we should. So I think that the craftsman's level of efficiency needs to be a point of personal pride rather than economic reward for our circumstance.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.